We're going to go to Psalm chapter 62 today. Just hit on a little something I've been thinking about. Probably not as in-depth as it was, but it's something I've really been thinking about. And all that driving I do, I sit there and I think about it and it festers and I think about it again, and I look for a little other things. I listen to a few things, kind of see what their take on it is. But there's a lot to be said here. In the past, the past 4 weeks has been a series at all, but I feel like it all sort of ties in as well. But that's just the Word of God, I think. But this week, I want to talk about something that most Christians are missing. Something we got going on nowadays that we don't really focus on. And we focus a lot on the church. We focus a lot on our spiritual lives or what we need to be doing, what we don't need to be doing, stuff like that. But especially if you listen to the preaching nowadays, this is something that they kind of miss. And you'd be remiss to say that most people don't take words as the basis for their theology. Everyone has their beliefs and they have why they have their beliefs, but why do they really have that belief? What really holds them in time of trouble? It's not the doctrines they hold that hold them in that time of trouble. It's not totally the church that takes them through that time of trouble. When they're all alone and they have nothing left, what do they have to hold them? So I'm going to go ahead and read the whole chapter of Psalm 62. We're going to start in verse 1. It says, "Truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He is only my rock. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. How long will ye imagine mischief against a man? Ye shall be slain, all of you. As a bowing wall shall ye be, and as a tottering fence. They only consult to cast him down from his excellency. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Selah. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times. Ye people, pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Selah. Surely men of low degree are vanity, and men of high degree are a lie. To be laid in the balance, they are altogether lighter than vanity. Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. God has spoken once, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. Also unto thee, O Lord, belongeth mercy, for thou renderest to every man according to his work." So I hear this a lot, particularly on social media, from, younger women. And we throw this term around that it calls God his rock. And we use that term very much in church. You know, there's a verse in there that says, "Upon this rock shall I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." And we've almost taken that analogy of having a rock and just turned it into something every day. If you read on social media, someone about their boyfriend, "Oh, he is my rock." Their dad, "Oh, he's been my rock all my life." And we just throw this term around, but what does it mean when we use that term? Well, in those instances, it's usually used to purvey how consistent they've been and how they've been there unmoving the entire time. But this meaning here in the Bible that we should have as Christians is much deeper than that. In this instance, the rock is not simply a rock that just landed there and won't move. This rock is something embedded deep in the earth and grows high above it, such as a mountain. That is how unmovable this rock is that he's talking about. If you look into what that language is saying, it's not just a rock. It's more in the instance of like the side of a mountain, or even such as a mountain that stays against a lake or ocean. So regardless of it being beat upon, it does not move. So what does this mean for us? Well, God is much more than something that we read about on Sundays and Wednesdays. And God should always be something more than just something we run to when we're in trouble. But a couple things we can pull from this here is, when we are in trouble, what do you have left? In the church, there's always a limit to where how far people will go. But there is no limits to how far God will go. And here we see David saying that God is his retreat and his tower. It's somewhere he can go and pour his heart out and not worry about reproach or unwelcome advice, but rather just comfort and the words that soothe his soul. In God, we have that. And it's not always something we go and tell our troubles to just so we have someone to listen. Those of you here who go to God regularly know that it's not always an audible answer, but it's more of, it's out there, you've said it, you've communicated with God, and you know it'll be okay. David went to God and wrote these psalms, but did he ever write an answer from God? Did he ever write what God said back to him in those times? Or do you notice that what he writes is what he's reminded of about God while he's there with him? It's the attributes of God that he's reminded of and the history that God has through the years that comforts him in his situation. So when we go to God, it's not an outpouring of our soul to make ourselves feel better, but rather it's a reminder of what God has done in these situations through the years. Because there's no new situation to God. He's had thousands of years of man to have this. He's had his word written for thousands of years. So if anybody would know, it's these people right here. He's not so much worried about what's wrong with him as much as he's worried about what God is to him and whether he remembers. So in your troubles, what should you do? The remembrance of your troubles and past troubles and how terrible these troubles are very rarely solve your current troubles. However, the remembrance of what God has done for you through the years and what he is to you calms those troubles more often than not. Right here, he says, "Trust my soul," and he's reminding himself. You got to read the language here of how he's talking. He's not writing to us, per se. He's writing to himself as this, "Truly, my soul waiteth upon God." And then later on down the line, it says, "My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him." He's like, I don't expect these guys to just drop it and move on. I don't expect these guys just to drop their trespass against me and move on. My expectation is that God will work it out in his time. We've been talking about the life of David in the morning service, and I've really enjoyed it and going through it and how many years and years and troubles it's taken him to get to where God said he would go. But he never forced his way there. He never tried to expedite his own path to the throne. He waited on God. He waited for him to be given, because if God said it, he knew he would get it. And he also knew that nothing would come to pass until what God said had come to pass. And so if it wasn't good for him to be in the throne right now, he just simply believed and reminded himself that that's the way it had to be. That's the way it will be, and it's okay. So when it comes to the subject of God being the rock of somebody, it's almost, you don't have to look anywhere but David. He is one of the best examples of it. So what can we pull from this for our own personal lives? Well, we may start by doing what he did. What is the rock of God? What is God the rock of? Several things. God is the rock of the church. and that he has to be the foundation in order for it to be successful, in order for it to work, in order for the worship to be the way it needs to be. So founding on a rock needs to start right here personally. He's the rock of us personally. And correction, he has to be the rock of us personally. We talk a lot about this person being the rock in our life, the consistent, the constant, where it all started and where I can always go back to. And that kind of echoes back to where they'd put up stones of remembrance along their journey so that they'd remember what God did for them right there. So how do we take this application of God our rock and apply it to our own lives in a culture where God is nothing more than a church, words, or a lifestyle? I think first we have to get out of our minds that this is not a lifestyle choice. One thing that's huge in politics and culture alike is everything is a lifestyle choice. Whatever you choose to do, whatever you choose to be, is now a choice of lifestyles that you cannot argue with. Down to the very fact that Christianity, I passed a billboard today where they're preaching a sermon on the correct Christianity lifestyle. I forget the title, but that's what it was, on how to be what you're going to be. And so we've taken this and made it a lifestyle choice. We've taken it, one, two, three, repeat after me, religion that you may choose. I was on my ethics discussion board. I'm just about through that class, but you can't get through that class without realizing one thing, and that's nobody knows. Because we've taken everything and made it optional. This is an option. Going to church, we're open. It's an option. We live in a competitive deal where if whatever church has the best options is the option we choose, or we just choose not to go. So this Christian lifestyle that we've purveyed and pushed throughout the years is the kind is something we improve upon. This lifestyle is something we change and tweak as the years go by, because life changes, the world changes, so our lifestyle needs to adjust with it in order to fit perfectly in this little world. Forgetting that we're sojourners and we're not staying and we're not of this world. So we must first remove ourselves from a lifestyle choice of religion. We must remove ourselves of just church groups and prayer groups being a club we are a part of. You need to decide if you're part of the church or if you're part of a Christian lifestyle that makes your life better. You need to decide who it is you're serving. The God that people serve today is generally there to make their life better. It's for your best life now. It's for your most improved. It's just, I don't really know how to put it out there in words, but it's for self-improvement. We serve a God of self-improvement in this day and age where everyone wants this God to just make them what they need to be. An effortless transformation into the super Christian that'll change the world. Why do you think we have all these ministries and missions being sent out to do whatever? And I mean, most of it's going around churches and asking for money. But some of it is, I mean, there's all these clubs and the churches. Everyone's got to be a part of something. And the purpose of that club is to better yourself. I looked at a prayer group on Facebook this past week. No one invited me to it. I was scrolling and I seen somebody posted on it. And I clicked on it, and the description of this prayer group from somewhere up north, I don't even know where, the description of this prayer group was, improve yourself better with prayer. So the idea of this prayer group was not so much to pray for others or give a prayer request or say, hey, I need prayer in this area. And if you looked at the posts, and most of them were private, but there were some on there public, and I wasn't joining it to snoop, was not, it was almost like advertising books such as The Prayer of Jabez and how to pray to make your day better. One of them was pray this prayer day one. I guess it was a prayer challenge. I've never heard of it. It said pray this prayer day one. And the consistency of the prayer was focus on God in order to make your day better. That sounds pretty good. It does sound pretty good. But I'll tell you, the rest of that prayer consisted of you asking God to bless your day, asking God to bless each meal and to not go hungry and give me this and give me that and I want to accomplish this today. It said always include one accomplishment that you want to get done for the day so that God will give it to you. Always include one thing that you want God to do for you that day so that you will get it that day. It was almost like an incantation where you prayed this part and prayed this part and then you threw in this here in order to get what you wanted done that day done. That in no way improves yourself unless you have a self-love doctrine. So where in there would you say that God is their rock? Where in there can you say that God is such an essential part of their life that they could not live without it? Well, I can tell you this. I can get up and I say, Elizabeth, I really want this done today. It needs to be done today. I'm going to be at work all day, but I really need you to get this done today. Like, there's no waiting. I just really need it done today. I said it four times and I can leave. And usually if I come back and she's got it and she'll have it done. So did I need God to get that done? That one accomplishment I wanted to get done for the day? What's any different from me telling Elizabeth I wanted that done today than me telling God that I wanted that done today? So is God somebody really important to you that you can't live without? Or is he your employee that you write a to-do list out to every morning in your prayer life? Yep. In this culture, that's what it is. That's how we're teaching our children to pray. That's how we're teaching our children to worship, which is not true worship at all. We're teaching our children self-love, self-worship, and self-employment with God as your employee. And that's not going to work. We teach them ways to get people in the church and then ways to keep them in the church without knowing what the church really is. All we know is that church is a place we go for Kool-Aid and snacks. And Kool-Aid and snacks is pretty cool, but it's not what church is all about. You can get people in with Kool-Aid and snacks, but you can't get them saved with Kool-Aid and snacks. The Lord is the only one that can do that. So we must remove ourselves from that culture. And anyone listening to this, as we mentioned before, you have to remove yourself from that culture. If all you know is that God is a good God that gives you stuff, you don't know anything about God at all. Everyone always has a snappy slogan, if you haven't been here today, you haven't ever been here, because it's so new and so awesome. Well, I can tell you this, if that's all you know about God, you really don't know God at all. You can know one attribute about God and still not know God. Because God is collectively all of his attributes together. And all of his attributes do not, if you single one out, you can misconstrue it. But each attribute builds on another. And the only way you're going to know that is to read the Bible and read it subjectively to yourself. The Bible is for everybody. So if we remove ourselves from that, how do we need to look at God? What is God? Who is God? God guides us. It says, even David said, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. A path to what? A path to life and a path with God. We read all these cute little poems about how God walked next to us, and there was only one pair of footprints in the sand, and that was Jesus carrying us through. But I think the moral of the story of that poem is that he did not know that Jesus was carrying him at all. The moral of that story was he didn't even know Jesus was there during his time of trouble. So is that really what we want to pass on through our churches and preach sermons about? David here knew that God was his only hope in time of trouble. He knew that God was there all the time. He knew that God would take care of him. So how shallow is it that we end our sermons with a poem about us not even knowing that Jesus was there? If you know God, you'll know he's there. Part of knowing God is knowing he's always there with you and you continually walking with him. Because he never leaves. You walk away. To know Jesus so closely, you must be in his word. You must be in a good church. And most of all, you must know where you're basing everything out of. That's another thing about ethics class, is they asked me about my divine command ethical theory, which is a technical term for the Bible, how I could be so confident in basing my entire ethical theory of life around what a higher being has said, to which I replied, well, I know that he is inherently good because he is God and because his word says so. I said, well, that takes an enormous amount of faith, doesn't it? And I just can't do that, they said. I just can't do that. But they are more than welcome to believe Kantianism, which believes that the goodwill is the only generic good in the world. And the only way to have goodwill is that action has to have a moral principle behind it, but they don't know where they get the moral principles about the moral principle to make the action, to make the goodwill, to make it ethical. You trace it all the way back, and there's no root. There is no base. There is no foundation. We're back to rocks. What do we put a house on so that it does not sink and shift and we're constantly fixing it? A rock. Well, going back to Kantianism, there is no rock. All it is it goes back about this far and then a circle happens and they start talking in circles and they never answer your question and you won't find an answer. If you can trace it back to the absolute base, this is why I believe it, then you can get there. In your life, you must start with a rock. You can't talk in circles and expect to get somewhere. You can't talk in circles and not have a root to where you're just moving around like a walking tree or something that never actually puts roots down, just keeps going around from puddle to puddle, wherever they can find it. You must have a rock. And God is that rock. You can look and you can dig and you can piddle around and ask and talk, but you will never find anything to set your life and your belief and everything on that'll hold. This is the only rock. How do you know that? Look around. Just look around. I don't have to go through life and experience every puddle, every bedrock, every dirt, everything, you know, everything in the world. I don't have to experience that to know that this is the only rock. Because I can look at other people and know that isn't working. I can look at every other, you can look in their eyes and know that even though they're quote-unquote happy, they're the saddest person in the world. Why do movie stars commit suicide on a constant basis? Why do rock stars, movie stars, I mean everything, everyone that has everything that this world says will make you happy, and they're still committing suicide? Because deep down, they were talking in circles. They had no root. Life was meaningless. They had no rock. So what we ought to do is, for one, seek the rock for ourselves and be sure and know and make sure everyone else knows that this is our rock. If you want to know anything about me, just come back here and start here. Just like David said here, "My soul, wait thou only upon God." That's where it started. That's where it ended. Whenever he was in trouble, this is what he come back to. Why? Because you could put everything on this rock and it would not break. You could put everything on this rock and it would not shake. You could stand on this rock and you would not fall. Because God is faithful. He even mentioned several times here that he is his salvation, his glory, the rock of his strength, and his refuge was all in God. All through this rock in God is how he did anything. Because he could build there and be confident because of what God has done and who God was in the past. After we know this rock, your life is unmovable. Your life is unshakable. In the New Testament, it says, always abounding in the work of the Lord, steadfast, unmovable. Well, how do you do that? Not as humans, not in our flimsy ways, but if your ways are based in the rock of God, then it will be steadfast, it will be unmovable. And you will always be abounding in the work of the Lord. This is not something that you can do in your own power. We look at people, and I know we all do it. We all have that one guy we look at, and we say, that's the guy I want to be when I get older. Consistent. Always the same. But we also all have them guys that we look at and say, man, you just don't know what he's going to do next. We just don't know what he's going to do a year from now. We don't even know if he'll be doing it next month. He may switch jobs. He may run around. There is no consistency in that life. There's no consistency. You can't float around in what you think is right and be consistent. One thing that we're well known for is that we all do the same stuff pretty much every day in the same job and usually the same stuff. I come in every day and I do the same thing every morning. I didn't realize it, but everyone knows where to catch me at what times. They mentioned that the other day. I went to my computer, I turned it on, I go back, get a cup of coffee, I say hi to service, I swing back around to my desk and sit there, and I do a couple things on the computer, I walk a lot, run around, but everyone knows where I'm going to be at what times. And if I'm not, they're totally thrown off. My sales manager said it the other day. I was like out on the lot for an extra 10 minutes and he didn't know where I was. He was calling me. It was terrible. But it's just consistency. And that may be just me, but everyone I see that is steadfast in truth and knows God and communes with God may not, you know, they're not, you know, going to do the same thing every day like it's going to mess them up if they don't, but they don't change jobs every 3 months. They don't church jump everywhere they go. They're not nomads. You can usually find them where they're at most of the time. They don't go and do all the time. Because with this base, there's a peace in your heart that does not make you stir every second of the day, not knowing what's going to happen or not knowing who's who or what's what. You have to know. The Word of God is consistent, and that carries through to your life. And that means a lot to people. So how are we in the church expected by other people to act? Well, people expect you to be consistent. People expect you to be nice and all that. But let me ask you this. Even others in the church that are here watching you, you almost feel like there's more expected of you because there's the truth. For much is given, much shall be required. So what are we doing to make sure that we're founded in the rock? What are we doing to make sure that we stay on the rock, that we're building on the rock? And more importantly, what are we passing to our children in order so they can have the rock of Christ? Are we setting a good example? Are we teaching them what needs to be taught? Because there's more to it than just 1 + 1 and ABC. Is our example what it needs to be for the world, for our children, and our church? Because when you stand on this rock, you see farther than most people see because you're higher up. So are you looking into the future? Your life, as we've talked about before, doesn't start now. If you have eternal life, your life is forever, not when you die. So are we planning for eternity and building on a rock? Are we sitting there patting the rock on the side of the mountain? Say, one day I'll be up there. One day I'll have a real nice home up here. That's not the way it should be. Start building for eternity now, because that is where we're going to be forevermore. I hope everybody in this room. So who is your rock? Do you know what the rock is, or are you just floating through life on some whimsical idea of who God is? Step one to doing anything in the Christian life is knowing who God is and who God is to you. And you must know before you can get started. So what's holding you up? Is it your ideas about God? Is it what you enjoy in life? What stops you from reading the Bible every day? Do you know enough? Never. Do you just not have time? Are you too busy? Slow down and get to know God and know who He is to you. Be sure He's your rock, your foundation, and your high tower, your refuge, everything in life. God must be your everything for you to do something.